Hi, I'm Jenny.
And I'm Rosie.
And we're here today with our two guest speakers that are kind of like permanent guest speakers. But while we have our guest speakers with us, wanted to talk about...
I'm Scott.
Oh, I'm Trina.
Yes, sorry. Guest speakers are Scott, you're fired. Trina Silva. Thank you very much for joining us today.
We're both glad to be here.
Yes, very glad.
I was so excited. I just started talking. Well, today's topic is going to be Rosie's search for work.
Yes.
And this kind of was a discussion that we've talked about. Rosie has interned at different companies in different industries. One of her internships was something that was not, it was kind of manufacturing, I guess. And that is not something that was interesting to her. And we kind of talked about that she looks at, you know, community impacting philanthropic organizations, but she's not the first person I've heard say that. I've read up and they're like, millennials are looking for companies. They want to be feeling a part of something, a bigger cause, looking for community give back. And if that's not happening, these companies that don't have this strong community connection are facing hiring deficits, I guess. So kind of wanted to see, how do we bridge that for, I think, Rosie, when did you graduate?
Last year. So last 2019. Year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is not new. There's actually a couple of movies about millennials who get their degree and then they get, and they're like, oh, I don't have a job. And I don't. And then it's like, yeah, well, it's real life. Now you have to do something. You have your dream job, but then sometimes you have to just work and make a living. And so kind of wanted to see how would that gap be bridged from different perspectives.
Yeah. Well, since you know, I come from a perspective that's about 30 years your senior. But I think we have to look at the differences in time, first off. And that is, when I was graduating, the next step was to get married. If you weren't already married, depending. And so, you had a purpose beyond... You didn't have to find a purpose. You had a purpose. You now had a family. And there was a good chance that, if you were a man, that your wife wasn't necessarily working. Or if she was working, it was part-time. It was something like that. So you come from that, and so you had a desire. You had a reason to work immediately. And so you really didn't have time. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but you didn't really have time to worry about what it was going to be. As a matter of fact, you know, you usually found a job that either it was somebody that your parents knew or relatives worked at or something like that. You didn't even necessarily choose the field. You know, when I started in the printing business. And I didn't even know what the printing business was. But we had a friend of ours that knew the guy that owned the company, and I went to work for him. And I was 16 years old, and I ended up starting a whole career there. So I think that we just, I think back then we took this idea of that was just going to be our lot, and we were going to take it, and we were going to make the best out of it. So I think that that's kind of the, you know, the difference that now that, I mean, it's because it's the people my age that are now managing the millennials. And so it's hard to understand it because it was like we had this drive from the very beginning. You know, we just wanted a job. And so I think maybe we'll look at millennials and say, well, you got a job. You know, what more could you want?
You have opportunity or a job.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think maybe that's a start of it. Trina, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. I'm on the cusp of millennials, so I can kind of see you know, Rosie's point here, and I kind of lean more towards how she's feeling. For me personally, I went to college and I thought, okay, as soon as I graduate, I will get a job because I have a degree. And I feel like that was kind of what, I don't know, I don't even know where I got that idea from. Maybe my family or counselors, teachers, but I thought, okay, I'm going to have a degree. And I wasn't able, or I'm going to have a job, but I wasn't able to get a job just because I had a degree because I didn't have experience. It was kind of like a catch-22. So I wish that I could go back to your time where it was like, hey, come and work for me. And you didn't have experience in printing, but you went and you did it, and that was your career at the time. And for me, it was like, oh, you don't have experience, so we can't hire you without experience. But then I couldn't get something with to get the experience. So I'm feeling you, Rosie, like on that. But I think that you have some really great experience and you have a lot to offer. And I think the problem is maybe, I don't know, like maybe there's not jobs out there that are exactly fitting what you're looking for. And maybe you need to go somewhere else, not Washington, D.C. because the cost of living is too high.
Well, and I think that's another thing is paying your dues. And you got to start, you know, I forget who sings it, but start it from the bottom down here.
It's Drake.
Is it Drake?
Yeah.
But seriously, you're starting from the bottom. Yeah. And to your point, you have not to minimize higher education, but you have a piece of paper. And that's why they're looking for the experience, because the paper doesn't translate all the time, most of the time, to the actual working corporate world.
Right.
And so that's where experience comes in. And, but then it's like, where do you get your foot in the door to get that experience?
Right.
And I think that's where kind of like you, and also I know in Germany, they kind of like put you down two paths. There's a technical path, and they decide this, I think, in middle school.
Correct.
The technical path and the college path. Well, our school systems have been pushing everybody to college. Right. College, college, college. Mm-hmm. So we've been funneling hundreds of thousands of students down this college path when not all of them were cut out for college, and kind of like poo-hooing trades,
right?
And which actually make really good money and are really good blue collar jobs, are really good stable jobs for the most part.
Absolutely. And also you're probably your biggest source of your small business.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I think I was the only one out of my siblings to go to college. And both of my brothers are blue-collar workers, and I know my younger brother, and I'm sure my older brother too, but I know my younger brother makes six figures. Do I make anywhere near six figures? No. Do I wish I could go back in time and not go to college and save all that money and be making six figures now? Yes. And same for my sister-in-law, his wife. She makes six figures, and she's in real estate, never went to college. And I am jealous that they're living this six-figure life, and I'm eating ramen noodles.
Is that what's in your bag?
You know, also I think, though, that the expectation when I took my first job was I expected minimum wage. I didn't expect any more than that, and so it wasn't an issue. And everybody that I knew got a job for minimum wage, mm-hmm. so it wasn't an issue. But then when you have somebody that came out of college with zero experience in maybe those areas, right? They weren't going to take minimum wage because you've expended, like you said, you have a lot of expense in what you've done and just in your student loans all by themselves. You can't work for minimum wage. But I think that was, you know, that's a part of it, you know, and now there's an expectation, you know, is that, well, no, minimum wage isn't going to be enough for me, which, you know, it's probably true for most.
Well, plus the cost of living.
Yeah.
Plus your student loans.
Right. Yeah, like, it's 100% true. Right. I'd be living under a bridge.
But, you know, you started early. You know, you started when you were 16, and hopefully by the time you graduated. I mean, when I was in high school, I mean, you had so many trades that you could learn in high school. Mm-hmm. Auto body, metal shop, you know, I mean, welding, construction trades. So there were guys that were making really good money when they were 17, and, you know, even before they got out of high school, because they had that training. And it was kind of, what you'd say, real-world training. You know, draftsmen. I mean, they actually learned draft. So now, if you come out of high school and you don't go to college, you really don't have anything, a marketable skill. And then it's really tough because you're going to try to support yourself. And on minimum wage, it's just not going to happen. So, you know, I think that's a tough part. And I know we're kind of getting away from what Rosie was first talking about, was this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think that maybe some of it is just the fact that
your purpose needs to get a job.
Well, no. But,
pay the bills.
Pay the bills.
But maybe it's just like we search for something else because we're like, we're really not even happy with where we are. So
right.
Now I want to at least find a reason for being there, mm-hmm. beyond just work.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think maybe like some positions you can start out doing something maybe you're not necessarily wanting to do, but then your true talent and passion shine through. and people take notice, and your job can evolve from there. And I know
you're supposed to shine.
You're not supposed to shine. I'm just
No. According to the 48 laws of power that
we're not doing that.
We're done with that.
But you're not supposed to shine.
Put that book away. But yeah, I think I know, like, personally, some of my friends, they started in positions and then they started getting promotions, or they created a position for them based on the talents that they had. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you know, that's a possibility. And like, I know for me at work, I'm always trying to do a little bit extra by joining a committee, or, you know, like, I know when I worked for the chamber, like, just doing more stuff education focused, because I was really passionate about that, and, you know, hoping that somebody would take notice and be like, hey, she's really good at that. Mm-hmm. Whether it be my boss there or somebody that I had networked with.
I think Stephen Covey, the late Stephen Covey, wrote the book, Seven Basic Habits of Highly Successful People. He said that every choice we make is our choice. Everything that we do, we choose. And he said, and you have to have that because it does give you purpose. So if you say, all right, well, I don't choose to work. It's like, no, you do choose to work. What happens if you don't work? Well, I don't work, I lose my car, or I can't. Okay, so do you choose those things? Yes. All right, so you choose to work. So it's kind of, if you take that in, then it's not as like struggling. Mm-hmm. Because you're seeing the greater purpose just in your own life. And so sometimes it's like, well, if I see the greater purpose in my life of helping people do this or helping people do that, then is this one thing going to make me grow closer to that? And if it is, it's like, all right, great, then I can make that choice.
So you're saying that maybe just the purpose of what the paycheck allows us to do should be the purpose enough to take a job at a place that maybe is not as glamorous, in an industry that's not where we initially thought, because the purpose is this paycheck allows me to do, have my home, have my car, have my stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. It becomes that vehicle to get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes you need to make like small sacrifices like that to get where you want to be. And I know that I've taken some jobs where I'm like, I do not want to be here. This is temporary. So, yeah. And you're like, I will suffer through it and I will make the most out of it. And I'm a hustler and I'm going to get where my true passion is and where I really want to be. So I will just, you know, get through this little moment in time.
You know, I think too, I mean, we see greatness when we hear about the sacrifices that they made to get there. Or even what their parents did or whatever. You know what I mean? So I think that it is a part of it. And I think you have to embrace that, you know, whether you like it or not, you have to embrace it, you know? And I remember I heard Spike Lee speak one time, and, you know, he just talked about how his grandmother just, you know, encouraged him to do things. And like she's like, I'll help you do your first movie. I'll give you, you know, I mean, it was like, and that moved him, you know, because she was willing to sacrifice for him. And so, you know, he grew off of that. So I said, sometimes if it's not everything we want, we got to find those things that we can still grasp and move us along, you know, to get there. Because now Spike Lee can do whatever he wants to do, right? And does, yes, you know, right. And he helps people he wants to help. And, you know, he's a great guy. So, but it didn't start that way. You know, I mean, he had to really fight and do things that he didn't want to do.
Right.
To get there, you know. And I think that that's what we see in all of these leaders. You know, I mean, we do. You know, the Bloomberg commercial, if you listen to that now, that he's running for president. But it's his story about being fired when he was 39 years old. And then what did he do? You know, he ended up producing a computer. I mean, so it was, you know, that wasn't necessarily his purpose, but man, look what he did.
That's
know?
What I'm waiting for to happen in my life.
To get fired?
I still got time. I can be fired. I can invent something cool. I can be Oprah.
Yes. Yes, you can. Yes. So, Trina, you work at a local university. And from what you see from the students coming out, what are some of the things that they're facing as they're coming out? Rosie's a little bit ahead of them by 6-7 months. But what are you seeing
for
the students entering the workforce?
I think that I'm seeing students not being prepared for what the workforce is like. or even getting their foot into the workforce. So things haven't really changed. For me, it was the same thing. Just like basic things, like not knowing how to interview or how to have a resume like that looks great that people are going to want to read. I was talking about a resume that I was given one time that had butterflies on it. And I was like, why? Why would you ever do that? This isn't Legally Blonde.
Great movie.
I love that movie. I object.
Not the laws of power.
This is why the laws of power didn't resonate with us. We like movies like Legally Blonde.
It's a great movie. She became a lawyer at the end.
I know. That's an awesome happy ending.
But I think that maybe students, they're just not as prepared for the real world. And I don't know. I guess my big thing that I was talking about recently is that I think mentors are really important. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just surrounding yourself with those people that have those qualities that you don't have but that you would love to have, or have the job that you want to have, so that you can pick their brain and be like, how did you get there? Mm-hmm. And how can I get there? Mm-hmm. And who do you know that can help me get there? And even just having the guts to ask somebody those questions, because there's so many people that have great stories of how they got to where they got. And they love to tell their story and they want to help other people to succeed. And so, you know, that's been one thing for me, is just always encouraging students that I come into contact with to take that chance and, you know, go and, you know, step out of their comfort zone.
So I got a question, two questions for you, Rosie, but this one, mm-hmm. then a follow-up. So what are you looking for your first job? I mean, what like checks all the boxes?
I think from my experience working internships, working, you know, the part-time jobs that I've had, I think one of the biggest things is just the culture of the company. So just being part of something where you feel valued, you feel included with projects or campaigns or just new initiatives that they have going on. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I look for in a company. And then I think following that, it's just their philanthropic work. So whether it's an oil and gas company that gives back to the community with scholarships, or a organization that, you know, maybe like a recruiting organization or company that gives back in different ways, whether it's like mentoring students, or maybe they have like a workshop about, you know, interviewing and things like that. So those are probably the two top things that I look at companies whenever I interview. So just the culture, and if there's a way that they give back to the community, and how does that look like for them?
Okay. So let me ask you on follow-up. If the company that, say, wants to give you a job, mm-hmm. and you can't check both of those boxes mm-hmm. off, but you still need a job, mm-hmm. do you feel like you would be selling out or selling short if you took that job?
I don't think so. I think if I could get one or the other, I would be happy.
Okay.
Whether it's having a good culture of the company or a company that gives back, I would be happy with either or both, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you got a job where a company didn't have that philanthropic side, that would be the opportunity for you to shine, mm-hmm. where you come in and change that company's, like, they're the way that they work and think. You're the person that can go in and change that. So that's right. I would see it as an opportunity to mm-hmm. take a job that didn't offer that, because you can go and, you know, do what you're passionate about and get people on board to do it with you.
Right.
So I think that, you know, you shouldn't
close the door.
Yeah, definitely.
No, for sure. And I think that with, you know, my experience in nonprofit and just working with different clients throughout my college years, and now that I am part, or that I've been with a nonprofit for 6 or 7 years, whether it's working professionally or just with them alongside, you know, you meet so many people and you network with so many national nonprofits to the smallest nonprofit that you can find, whether it's local or things like that. And you can see that there's just so many initiatives that you can probably incorporate anywhere. So you, Trina, saying that, I think that's really impactful because I've never really thought about it that way. But I think that's a really good way to think about it as an opportunity for sure.
Yeah, I like that a lot, Trina. And especially, I mean, it's like you've got to be an agent of change. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you look at yourself as an agent of change, it helps if you have a few of these laws, but we're not talking about them anymore. But, you know, maybe you can see that.
Yeah, those are out the window.
Influence is kind of important, but I do. I think that that's a great thing, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's a great.
And maybe that is a law in there somewhere, because I think that in a way I kind of have selfish reasons for doing things that I do at work by joining committees or by, you know, doing certain things. Like they say that I'm kind of like the cheerleader at work, mm-hmm. and I'm just like always willing to do.
Maybe it is. Law 11, learn to keep people dependent on you.
That could be it. I think that that maybe is a little bit, but there's something
Stop
else too.
Stop too soon.
We're gonna start doing the power of the laws, the 48 laws of power again.
Maybe only if it comes up naturally in conversation. Yes. Like now.
But definitely, like, you know, selfishly, I do some things. And, mm-hmm. you know, I want to be recognized for starting something. I love mm-hmm. that. I love when people take notice, like, hey, Trina's the one that did that. We would not have this volunteer right. program if mm-hmm. it wasn't for Rosie. So
you think then influencers have always existed, not just with social media?
Definitely.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's, you know, it's kind of that same idea. It's just, you know, mm-hmm. your followers are the people that are around you.
Yeah. That's great. So I guess I'm an influencer.
You're an influencer. Yes. Absolutely.
I like it.
So I'm going to ask, and I hate this question when I interview. I hate it.
Oh,
but
no.
I'm going to ask you it. Why should you get the job Ooh. Over all the other applicants?
That's a hard question. So I guess just in general, my experience that I've had with different industries, coming from, you know, oil and gas, interning with Schlumberger, and then corporate with mattress firms and different other companies as well. I think just looking at how different industries work and just being to network with a very diverse group of people and working with different people throughout the way, you learn just how to work with people and how to communicate with them. And I think whenever you have a job, whenever you're working for a company, I think communication is probably one of the biggest things, because there's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be projects or campaigns that you're working on, specifically with my field, whether it's marketing and PR. There's teamwork, a lot of teamwork. So whether it's, you know, I'm in marketing, then I have to work with a lot of other departments as well. So just being exposed to different people, to different departments and different industries, you kind of have a good view of what they're looking for, how engineers work, how communications work, and then just the difference and dynamics of people and the way that they work and what they're looking for. So kind of being able to learn the language that everybody speaks, then you can communicate a little bit better. So I guess to answer your question is just the diversity of industries that I've been in and the type of work that I've been doing. A lot of it comes down to knowing how to sell, market, and brand your product to different audiences, and knowing who your audience is probably one of the biggest things for me. Being in marketing and PR, knowing your audience, knowing how to talk to them. And I think one of the biggest things is just being bilingual. That opens up a lot of other doors as well. I mean, speaking Spanish and English opens up doors to a lot of different people as well. And specifically to Spanish speakers or native speakers, you know, whenever you speak to someone in Spanish and that's their only language, then you already have a connection. So you already have a step in the door, whether it's whatever it is that the product you're selling or that you're trying to talk to them about, you already have the foot in the door because you can speak their language and it feels like home. You feel like there's a connection with them already. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's...
Those are two. Mm-hmm. So Trina and Scott, how would you recommend that being answered? Not just specifically to Rosie, but by college, from a millennial coming out of college into a job interview where they don't have a lot of experience, just internships.
What I would recommend to anyone is, my colleague is so great at this, and I've started to do this as well, but to set meetings with different people that you have interacted with, worked mm-hmm. with, and like just talk to them about what you're looking for and like maybe your struggles and listen to them. A lot of them are going to probably tell you all the amazing things about you mm-hmm. and take note of those amazing things, because it's really hard to talk about yourself. Just like whenever you're answering this question, like right. I bet you somebody could answer that question for you so easily mm-hmm. and give you like 3 talking points to talk about in an interview because they know you so well. So like you and Jenny, y'all have worked together mm-hmm. and we've worked together. And right. so we know your work ethic. Mm-hmm. We know, you know, the talent that you have that you can bring to the table. And so just maybe having like conversations, but not just like hearing it and letting it go out your ears, but hearing it and even writing it down mm-hmm. or, you know, just sometimes you need that little pep talk, especially if you've been interviewing for a lot, like a long time, you yeah. start losing hope that you're going to get for a sure. job or you start doubting that, you know, like, am I really that great? Like, I thought I was super awesome, but and you're like, maybe I'm not. So, you know, just getting that confirmation from people. And it's got to be, you know, people that I guess are your cheerleaders, mm-hmm. you know, but you also want them to be honest and let you know what you need to work on. Mm-hmm. And I have some great friends that are that way. And sometimes they're just like completely blunt with me about things. And I'm like, ooh, that hurt. But I'm like, but I understand what you're saying.
Right.
So it's okay. But yeah, I think that maybe you should start doing that. Like just getting some feedback, and it can be like going to a coffee or like drinking some Frontera wine or, or maybe something better.
So I think that and it's not that all those things aren't great aspirations mm-hmm. and don't make, you know, would make anybody, I mean, a great employee, right? But you've got to be careful. You've got to get away from the Miss America thing. What do you want? World peace, right? That's it, right? And, you know, or world peas. I think somebody did a little blender with the peas, goodness. Right? Because it got so, you knew what they were going to say.
Yeah.
Right? And so everybody's going to say that same thing.
Right.
And even though you may be more authentic about it, they've already heard it.
Right.
So it's kind of what, especially for people that are interviewing, what are you going to tell me that I haven't heard?
Yeah.
What are you going to tell me? What real experience? Show me an experience that you had. In other words, where you came from, what you overcame to get that, what it means to you. Because people want that. Mm-hmm. They want emotion. You know, mm-hmm. they want to feel goosebumps when you talk to them. And if you can get that and just being who you are, that's going to get you the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes we almost want too much polish.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not what people are looking for. You know, I liked what I heard this speaker that I heard recently. He said, show your scars. Mm. It shows your humanity.
Yes.
You know, and if people can see the scars, they can relate. And if they relate, then they're going to bring you in because that's what they want. You got to be someone that's relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and like I said, I'm not taking away, I believe you're 100% authentic in what you're saying, and you mean it, but you've got an interview that's heard that same thing
right.
all those
right.
times, you know?
And, yeah, and I guess, so my other question would be, and I think this is a challenge that I have whenever I interview, it's how personal should you get with the person interviewing you. So how much is too much
right.
to share?
Well, I always say one way to look is watch the person you're speaking to.
Because they're like, whoa.
Usually, they will give you a lot of cues if you've gone too far.
But you don't want to wait until you get that TMI look.
Right. No.
You're not getting the job, right. psycho.
But you know, I think that you have to be conservative, but yet mm-hmm. it's the person that usually goes out on the edge that gets the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, also,
especially if it's a job you want.
In the 48 laws of power, what does it say? Like, don't say too much or right. something. Yeah. So right. just know when to really.
Yeah, so you can make your point, right. and then you can stop. You know, and because they also want you know, they want somebody too that usually is going to be very concise. Mm-hmm. That can use economy of words to explain what they want or who they are. And you can do that.
Yes.
And I think that that's where Trina's idea is fantastic of just getting some feedback from other people. Mm-hmm. Because they know that is the authentic. You know, that's who you are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we aren't always who we think we are. You know what I mean? Or right. we don't come off that way.
Right.
And so I think that you could, you know, just do so much from that. And then, but like I said, I think showing some of that is really important, yeah. especially your first job. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, your first real job, not that you haven't been working and doing that, but your first real job. Because once you get that out of the way, mm-hmm. then people are looking at what you've done, mm-hmm. right? What your accomplishments are.
Right.
You know, so it's funny, but, you know, nurses have that now. They come out of nursing school. And there's not a lot of programs for them to start. Mm-hmm. Now, once they're started, they can work anywhere because there's a shortage of right. nurses. But it doesn't even matter how much demand you are. And marketing is always a huge demand. In fact, it's one of the growth industries mm-hmm. that we know. But it's just getting past that first one.
Yeah.
So you can download Rosie's resume.
The link below.
And the link below. as of this date, she has not found a job. We will keep this updated when she does. But thanks.
She can tell she's a great person.
Yes. So thank you for listening. Thanks for the insights today.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate a great conversation. And hopefully if there's any other young people about to enter the workforce, about to graduate from college, that there were some takeaways from you to apply to your life. Until next time, have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.